Hi, let's start with this. Welcome to the session. This session is about System Center Orchestrator 2012, or formerly known as Opalis. This session is a 200 level session. My name is Ana Gabriela Hernandez Garcia. I just moved from Mexico. I've been working in Microsoft for the last 5 years. I just moved from the Mexico subsidiary where I'm originally from. That's why my name is too long. You know that in Spanish-speaking countries, we really love to use long names. And you know what? I remember many years ago, I used to work in this large outsourcing company. It's called EBS. I'm sure you know it. And I remember working in this company. I was in charge of the operations of the Windows Server platform. But a lot of the things that we had to do and that we had to solve, it was done in a manual way. All the backups, all of the monitoring, all of the, even all of the reaction to the, when we had some kind of problem and we had to solve that situation, we had to do it in a manual way. And obviously, we now have better tools, we now have better solutions, and that's why I'm so excited today about telling you about this amazing tool. Because with Orchestrator, we see the way from moving to this state that is about sleeping every day with one, with the cell phone from one side of the bed, and maybe the pagers, if you remember, because I use a lot of pagers on that time, sleeping with the pager on the other side of the bed, because at the moment that we received some kind of emergency, we had to go and solve that situation immediately. That's why we are so excited about telling you about this tool that is going to help us to automate a lot of those processes that we still do in a manual way. Okay, this is our agenda. We are going to take a look about cloud computing. We are going to check about System Center Orchestrator 2012. We are going to discuss how this amazing tool works, and we are also going to see what's new in Orchestrator. I want to ask you guys to keep your questions to the end. We have a lot to cover, so please hold your questions. We will have some time. And during my presentation, I will be mentioning over and over again three words. These three words are integration, orchestration, and automation. I really want you guys to understand what we mean with those three words and how they relate with a private cloud environment. There's no way to have a real private cloud scenario if we don't have those three key pillars enabling us to do and to play in a private cloud environment. When we think about cloud computing, we think about these attributes that we've been mentioning a lot during the TechEd sessions. If we think about something that could be self-service, this is not just about for the end user perspective. This is about the application owner, the business owner, and even for all of us, all of the system administrators, because we are the ones that have to deliver and that have to enable to deliver everything that is asked to us, even if that is provisioning a new user maybe, or even if we have to deliver the access to some particular application. We have to deliver that at the moment that is needed. So this is about being usage-based and scalable and elastic and shared. But imagine that we can go to a place and ask for that we need, and that magically happens. Today we are going to see why and how that magically happens can be achieved. The data centers are in a continual state of evolution. We've been witnessed about the moving from physical to virtual, and we've done a lot of effort here, a lot of task, a lot of things that we've been achieving in this area. But we also have to think about moving, about thinking two steps further. This is about delivering infrastructure as a service and platform as a service. And in here is where we can see that Orchestrator actually fits, because Orchestrator is going to help us to automate all of those processes, because this is not just about a tool that is going to automate everything. This is about process automation, and here is where Orchestrator is going to help us to do that. Okay, let's move on the agenda. Let's talk about what is System Center Orchestrator And to start with this, let's start with something fun. So I want to ask my amazing friend Phil. He's going to help us. He's going to show us what we can achieve with this great tool. Thank you, Phil.
Now? Thank you. All right. So what we're going to talk about in this scenario is a simple scenario that many of our customers bump into. So you're going to do a large amount of, say, physical to virtual conversions. And Microsoft's got a tool called the Microsoft Assessment and Planning Tool. It does a great job of going out and assessing your servers and then comes back to you with a list of servers that need to be converted from physical to virtual. But that's sort of where it leaves you. It leaves you with this little pile of, you know, database that says, hey, a bunch of names. How do you get started with that? How do you take that to the next level? How do you start the next part of the process rather than just individually going and doing the work of converting each one of those servers from physical to virtual? Now, the effort of doing that's probably not too big. You know, it's probably 4 or 5 hours per server. But when you start to add that up into hundreds of servers, it starts to really chew into your time. So a colleague and I sat down and said, right, that's a great process that we can talk about having some orchestration around. And we built this a while ago, so we're going to have a look at Apalis first. So Apalis is the predecessor to Orchestrator, and this demo is based in Apalis. We'll look at Orchestrator in a little bit. Here we are in Apalis, and we picked out two processes that we wanted to change in that environment. The first thing we did, we said, we want to take that flat list of server names, and we're going to turn those into change requests for the environment because we need to get some authorization approval processes. And it's this linking of the service desk system, whether it be Microsoft Service Desk or another service desk, that with the back-end orchestration that's so important because Service Desk is our orchestration for people. Orchestrator and Apalis are our automation of process in the back-end. So let me take you through a couple of the processes that we had. This first process loads up from the database all of the servers into change requests. It simply goes and reads the database, gets a list of names, then takes those names, creates change requests for each one, finds the owner of that system, and then attaches to that change request the owner, and then goes and finds the server object, the CI, and attaches that to the change request. Now, you can see also in here that if I've got some failure activities coming down the bottom, if anything in this process fails, I go and raise an incident against this. So I'm just going to run that process. And it's now going off talking to the service desk. Here I've used the integration into System Center Service Manager, but this could be many of the other service desk systems that Apalis integrates into, and we'll talk about those a little bit later on. When that process is actually running in the engine, I can see the status of it. I can have a look at the jobs that are running in there. I can go back and look at the history of any of those jobs and see all of the tasks that were actually executed in that environment as well. Now, our little process is finished, I believe. I switch back to my log. Now, if I pop into my Service Desk tool, Service Manager, and I refresh that, I should see a list of change requests that are sitting there. Now, the reason we've gone out to the service desk from Orchestrator, Orchestrator doesn't do a lot of people interaction stuff. It'll interact with all of our back-end systems, with databases, with text files, all those components, but it's not a great people interaction type system. So if we link into a service desk tool, we get that interaction. From here, we've got our change requests that are ready to go, and I can see that I want to convert this server from physical to virtual. Now, that change request might have a whole heap of information I might have pre-populated, or you might have been creating a demo and might be lazy like me and put stuff all in there. But the important component I've put in there is a bunch of activities that are about changing this server from virtual to physical. Now, this is another great interaction point with a service desk system. If we use automation in the back end, that's great. But we need to somewhere list out what processes are going on in the organization and the activities that need to be attached to that. And here in our service desk system, we've got a list of our activities that we want to do in our physical to virtual conversion. And the key component here is whilst Apalis will be actually ticking these pieces off when it does them, if Apalis broke, we can come back here and we can see a list of what needs to be done, and we can either restart some of the orchestration in the back end, or we can manually go and do them ourselves. So it acts as a bit of a backup and, you know, human interaction component. Now, before I go and approve that server to be converted from virtual to physical, let me tell you what's going to happen. We jump back to our Apollo server. I've got a second workflow here. Now, this workflow does a couple of other things, but I'm going to take this one out into the test harness, where you can see I brought it here, and I'm going to actually run it in a debug type mode. In the Apollo's test harness, we can see the data that's passing through when something executes. Now, I've started this process already, and the key component it started off with was a monitoring process. Now, what that monitor is doing is it says, I'm going to sit there and wait for an action to occur, and then when that action occurs, I will instantiate the workflow that we're looking at, the orchestration and automation components. So once that happens, it's going to create the change request, it's going to go and get the change request that we had created. It's actually monitoring for that activity to be marked as complete. It's going to check to see if the server is up to date with Configuration Manager. And if it's not, it will raise an incident against the server to say, this server doesn't have all its patches, someone should go and fix it. It's going to add the server to a Configuration Manager collection in the back end. So we might have a new collection called Virtual Servers or some component. It's going to check to see if Forefront's installed. And if it's not, it will install Forefront, thus removing the old antivirus software. And whilst it's done that, that marks us, well, that puts us to the end of our remediation activity. Now, this activity's got further to run, but when it gets to there, we're going to go off and mark the remediation component of that service ticket as complete. From there, it'll put the server into maintenance mode in Operations Manager, and it will then go and do the physical to virtual conversion on the server for us. Then it waits until that's done, takes the server out of maintenance mode, and then marks the overall activity complete. Now, as I said, I've started this one in the test harness. So it's sitting there monitoring away. If I go back to my service desk, and now I want to approve the physical to virtual conversion. I've got to stop saying that the wrong way. And mark that as completed. Put in some extensive comments that comply to MOF and ITOR. Approve that activity. Now, Apollos is reaching out to Service Manager to have a look and see what's happening. It'll find out that that activity has been done. And we come back to our component, and in a couple of minutes, that will find out that that activity has actually been started, and it will start the process of converting that server from virtual to physical. Thanks, Anna.
Thank you. Thank you, Phil. Okay, now let's move and let's understand what we saw before, and we are going to explain this in the way of those tricky pillars that I mentioned before. This is a key slide, guys. If you want to take something about this session, this is the definition and the concepts that you have to take away. So when we think about process automation, as you saw in the demo, this is not just about orchestrator. This is about putting every single piece in the same situation, in the same space, linked and working together as if they were one. Here it is where we are going to integrate the VMwares, the VMCs, the CAs, the same system center. And when we do that, when we integrate all of those single parts, all of those heterogeneous environments, when we put them in the same area working together as a single entity, then is when we achieve the real integration. Then we move to the next concept, that is orchestration. Now that we have everything connected in the same space, in the same area, now that we have everything playing together, how do we achieve that every single piece plays exactly at the right time, exactly at the right moment that we need to? If we think in an analogy with an orchestra, now we have all of the instruments playing in the same space. But how do we do for them to play something that could be nice to the human ear? How do we achieve something that could be in a good symphony, that is the end result that we want to accomplish? That is orchestration about. You saw in the demo something amazing. We have a starting point, then we have junctions, then we have something where A starts and then goes to B and then goes to C. But then A relies on B to be finished before C can start. That is the orchestration. And then at the end, we have the automation. The automation is when we go and we say, you know that? Let's automate that process. Let's automate that script that I have to do every single day. Let's automate that specific piece of task that I have to do, let's say, every week or something. Here it is where we are going to start to take away all of the manual tasks. And for that, here it is where we are going to start to take away some of the human errors. So that's why this is so important. And it's important too because if you do an activity that has an error in it, that error is going to run too, and it's going to run really fast. So we have to be very careful with this and to play with this before in some non-production scenarios. When we think about what we have in our IT environments, these are the capabilities that we have to work every day. And for sure, you have some investments in those areas. You already have some tools that you play with that now. And how do we do to integrate those parts? Remember that we mentioned before, we want to play everything as if they were one, as if they were the same entity. The way to accomplish that, here it is where we can see Orchestrator as the key enabler, because Orchestrator is going to help us to do that integration for that heterogeneous environment. Integration is part of the System Center suite. Orchestrator is part of the System Center suite. And because of that, it's deeply integrated with the System Center suite. We want to deliver the best process automation solution. And because of that, we need to think about two key aspects for this, the collaborative aspect, the connected aspect. And in here, we can think, we have the best-in-class solution. We are market leaders. We have a great community that's been working with this from the acquisition of Opalis. So that's why we have now, our partners are loving this stuff. We have an authoring tool, as you saw in the demo before, that is very easy to use. You will see a lot of that in some minutes. And we also have a way to integrate to almost anything. You just name it. We can connect anything you want. And also, we have the power to extend that connection. Moving on the agenda, let's check now how this tool works and about some concepts and definitions here. Phil is going to show us how to build a basic RAM book.
Cool, thank you. So before when I ran you through that demo, we didn't actually go into how that was built or what the components were to put that together. So we're going to put a couple of small things together now just to show you how easy the interface is to use. And that's probably the Opalis's biggest driver, and that's going to be continued with the Orchestrator, is it is very much a drag, drop, draw, and type in the information you know to get things happening. So here I've got a palette on the side, and we'll talk about a little bit of these components, the inbuilt components. And I've got my run book that I'm going to edit in the center here. I've got a list of my run books on the side. If I pull out a component and drop it on the page, I can then go and edit the easy dialog box that's there. I don't have to put scripts in any of these components, so we can just put in simple information. For example, if I want to run on this computer, a quick command. Now I can execute that run book and I don't need to go and off and do that piece of work. Now that's something very small and tiny, but the fact that we can now automate this unit as a whole and start to reuse it becomes quite powerful. So if we start to link these things together, I can actually reuse the information that's coming out of that. For example, if I want to write that information to a file, I can go into the text file management, and say, go and append the lines to a log file, and simply drag and drop that in. Now, I might have a file that I'm going to write this to. Choose some encoding, and the text I want to put in here. And obviously, I want to get the output of that previous component, so I need information that's being passed down there from the previous component, and I just choose subscribe, and I can select return data, and I can get some more information out of anything that's been run previously. I can augment this with my own information as well. So I might get the program output in that case and put down. And that'll just be passed out and appended to the end of that file for me. We can start to link in a lot more of these inbuilt components to do fairly simple tasks. Small file management tasks that can be automated and be put away. This is a good example. We want to move all the files out of our temp directory. So I've simply got the move file object and said, go and find everything in this temp directory, and then move it to this other area. From there, I'm going to read the lines out of the file, and I'm going to look in that file, and I'm actually looking for a certain piece of text. But this command here, the read line, is simply going to read all of that file up. Now, I've simply said the file name is this destination name, which is the file that I copied the temporary file to. And from there, I'm now going to go and append any lines that I want to this file. And that's, again, that simple append component. But I want to filter a bit of that information. Fact is, what I'm looking for here is anything that's got the word error in it. So I've actually done some filtering on the linking here and said, only come down this workflow if the result of the previous component, which I chose, that was the full line of text that we read from the file, starts with the word error. Now, I can get quite a few options. I can put contains or anything like that, but I chose, I only want to find the bits that start with that. Now, if I take that out into the tester, we have a quick look in my temp file directory. If I execute that, we can see it runs through. It's been moved out of my directory. I can come over to my old temp directory. Now, Apollos does a lot of the nice things for us, like collisions. In this case, I just simply ticked a radio box. If there was a collision, rename the file, and it's done that for me. So this is the file that I actually brought over. And we can see that that had in there the word error at the start of that line. And I asked it to append it to my error text file, and there it has. It's appended it to the end with that file name. So we can start to draw these things together quite simply to do small tasks, but it's when we start to reach out to bigger systems that do bigger things that we get bigger tasks. Anna.
Thank you. Now just checking and summarizing about the concepts that you saw on the demo. You saw those little icons on the right side of the screen. Those are the activities that we are going to play with. These activities are the ones that are going to help us to perform every defined action that we want to. This is about connecting to a database, maybe. This is about sending an email, running a script. Whatever that you need to do, those little activities are the ones that are going to help us. Then, when we have at least two or three activities together, then is when we can start thinking about a workflow. As you saw on the demo before. That workflow is called a RAM book. Then we have something amazing that I can see as a key differentiator between Orchestrator and some other tools. This is called the Databus. The Databus is going to help us to consume the information at the moment that we want to. Let's say that we started previously an activity, and that activity is delivering some information. That information is going to be available not just at the next step. It's going to be available at the moment that we want, two or three steps further. So we can go back and consume that information anytime, at any moment. And that is really, really powerful. And then we have the standard activities. The standard activities are the ones that are going to help us to do that connection with whenever we want, with the solution just out of the box. We don't need to think about something else. We have, let's say, something around 74 to 75 standard activities, and just with that, just with the solution out of the box, we can start playing and connecting with all of those heterogeneous environments that we discussed before. Let's take a look on what is this Databus about, and let's take a look also to the standard activities.
So the Databus really does make a difference. Besides for that ease of use and getting access to other systems, the Databus allows us to get the data out of those systems, but it also has some other properties around parallelization. Mike can do lots of things at once. It has the ability to start spawning off many components. For example, when I did that example of moving the temp file, this activity here at the start said move this temp file, right? But I put in a wildcard. It could have moved 20 temp files. But when I was thinking what's going on further on in the activity, I only had to think for a singular file. And that's because, by default, the data bus will actually instantiate new copies of the flow going further on for every multiple line of return data. We can change that concept. That's simply a run behavior, and we can choose to flatten it, at which point if I'd chosen that and it moved 20 files, it would have returned a list of 20 files and they were separated by whatever I'd chosen them to be separated by. However, if I'd moved 10 files here without flattening that data, it would have instantiated this read line object 10 times. Now, here's another example of that. Well, I'm going to read a file. It's a fairly simple type of component. And we do this quite often in scripting. You know, you ask to create a bunch of users or go and do such and such to a bunch of machines quite quickly, and here's the text file and a list of them. And it only takes you 10 or 15 minutes of searching on the web because you've forgotten how to do it, about how to read in the text file and then start a for loop around it. But we don't even have to think about any of that with a parler. Simply say, go and get me the contents of the text file and read all the lines in. From there, I'm going to choose to run a program. I'm going to choose the computer name out of that text file. Now, think, I could be creating users and I can use a common delimited file and just be creating lots and lots of instances after I've read that file. But I only have to think quite linearly about what I'm doing in action. And that's some of the complication when we do scripting. Because we started doing nested loops and if-thens and all that sort of stuff, it becomes a bit complicated and becomes very hard to follow afterwards, and we lose some of the reuse. All of that's taken away from us. We don't need to worry about it. In this case, I'll just choose to execute that runbook. And again, we'll see that it'll read the line. And that file's actually got two lines in it, two server names in it. And from there, we can see that it ran the program twice. Now, of course, it continued down that second path twice as well. So it then went and added all of those components. Now, that was a small task. I ran it against two servers. But imagine if you were running this against 1,000 servers. If you just wanted to go and quickly check the free disk space on 1,000 servers, well, which disks did you want to check? 1,000 servers might have 4 or 5 disks on them each, but that's quite simple for us because we can say, right, go and get all the servers. Now, for each server, what disks does it have? Now, go and get the free space on the disks. And the permutations of each one just get expanded out for us, and we don't have to worry about that too much. The other component is when we start to want to nest up these activities into reuse. You know, scripts are great for reuse. I'm sure a lot of you have got libraries of scripts in your environment for management that you have reuse, but the first thing that happens when you want to reuse a script is you go into the library, you look at the script, you say, yep, it does 90% of what I do, you take a complete copy of it, and then you change up what you need to do, and that becomes a new script and has a new life of its own. With Orchestrator, we have the ability to reuse runbooks inside each other and also use command line parameters for each runbook. The way we pass in parameters to a runbook, in this example, I've got an initialized data component. We saw the other runbook I showed you before that was started with a monitor. Most runbooks should start with a monitor or an initialized data. And the reason for that is the initialized data just happens to be here's where to go and get your parameters from. And inside initialized data, I can add new parameters and give them different names if I want to, give them different data types. And here I'm passing in the server name for this one. And I pass that on to my next thing, go and get the free disk space off this server, off the C drive. And then I choose to return some data. Now, a little bit of a gotcha when you first come into return data and you want to choose what data to put in here. The actual data that's defined being returned is defined at the runbook level as a whole. So you need to come into the properties of the runbook and choose the return data up here. And that's because we have well-defined input and output parameters for the runbook. Now, when I call that runbook, I'm going to do a very simple thing that we were doing before, simply going off and looking at the free disk space on those servers. And I've got another component here. I've chosen go and read this file, the server list again. And then I'm going to choose to invoke the runbook. I choose my runbook from my list of runbooks that have been saved in the environment, and I see it populates the parameters automatically for me. Now, the very nice thing about this is we can start to hive off parts of the runbooks that would be very useful for or could be defined by certain parts of the organization. For example, if we wanted to have a runbook that changed a firewall port, we can define who can access that runbook, but we can also tell the security team that they can own it. They can define the runbook, they can build it, they can put whatever they want in there, as long as they publish up to us what the input parameters are and what the output parameters are. And what this allows us to do, this becomes this orchestration component where we can start to pick and choose lots of bits of runbooks that have been defined previously and start to build those into bigger business activities. For many of you, if I said to you, what is the end-to-end process of deploying a new server in your environment, that starts to become a very big thing to define and becomes a little bit like the chocolate elephant. However, if we start to go and say, right, how do you go and deploy the new operating system? That's a small and simple process. No worries. Define that quite clearly. Right, what else do you do in that? Oh, how do we cut off some more disk? That's a nice, simple process. But when we come to build the bigger process, we only have to build off these larger building blocks. So while we're going to demo quite a few little pretty runbooks here today, they've got lots of nice coloured icons, what actually happens in a commercial installation of a Parlous or Orchestrator, you tend to get a lot of these calling different runbooks and then a lot of small components at the lower levels. Just take that one out to the runbook tester, and when I see that run, we'll see it pass through. It's a special added feature of the runbook tester that never turns up with the same layout at any one time. Sort of keep you guessing. And we can see that actually called off that runbook twice and just passed the information through. We don't get to see the details in there. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. We also have something that is called integration packs. The integration packs are really, really important to us. And for that, we are going to push the investment in this specific area. We are going to continue working with some of the management solutions that are now in the market, and also we are going to push the integration with some of those heterogeneous environments that we discussed before. This is really important to us, but we don't want you to think, you know what, you don't have an integration pack for this specific tool or for this specific solution, and that's why I don't want to use your solution. Remember, we don't need the integration packs. The integration packs are something that is going to make our life easier, that are going to maybe help us to solve something in just one step instead of using five or six steps. But this is something that we are going to continue investment and pushing. We want you guys to create some more of the integration packs. That's why we have a tool that is called Quick Integration Kit. So you can create and you can extend what already exists now. This is just to show you how important the integration packs are for us. This is a roadmap for what we have now in this beta version that we have, and also what we are going to accomplish on the release of the product for the second half of this fiscal year. As you can see here, we are integrating a lot with those heterogeneous environments and with those management tools that we discussed before.
And there's already a lot of integration packs available for a Parlous, and the vision is that integration packs will continue to run in the new version of Orchestrator as well.
Okay. Moving on the agenda, let's take a look now on what's new in Orchestrator. Thinking about this, when we acquired the previous version of Parlous, there were some points that we started to saw, and just thinking about what we are going to deliver on the next version. And in here, we saw some key investment areas. Thinking about the IT business manager, these are the guys that need to consume the information, that need to go and do some reporting and do some statistics, maybe. And that's why we are delivering the web service. We are going to discuss about that in some minutes. Thinking about the operator point of view, we need someone who we can delegate some specific task. Maybe they can run just some specific run books, not all of the information in it. And for them, we have an amazing console with Silverlight. We are going to show about it in some minutes too. Thinking about the IT Pro, we will have mostly the same experience that we have with Opalis, the same drag and drop experience that's been really good so far. And from the developer point of view, we have to deliver something for them to create and to extend that integration. In here is where we are delivering the quick integration kit. Thinking about the requirements for Orchestrator, what we need is basically Windows Server 2008 R2. From the database point of view, SQL Server 2008 R2. We are no longer going to support Windows Server 2003. So latest versions only, guys. This is really, really amazing, the new installer experience. If we think about, if we record the time from the moment that we start installing in a server with just SQL in it to the moment that we actually can start creating runbooks, we might think about maybe between 4 or 5 minutes. Let's take a look to that.
Cool. Before we jump into that, I have a quick question, and my apologies if you haven't used Opalis. Quick show of hands of who's used a version of Opalis. And keep your hand up if you've installed the self-service console for that. All right. Now, anyone can answer this question, and there's a prize for it. Jamie's got a book, so I'm looking for people right at the back to win the prize. So he can run all the way up there. Who can tell me what the worst part of the Opalis install for the self-service console was? Gentlemen, right up the back, yes. The JBoss was part of it, and I'll give it to you, but the actual answer is because you had to do it. Everything about it was bad, all right? So we fixed it. Jamie, you see the gentleman very, very far back up there? So this is the new installation for Orchestrator. Now, you'll probably notice if you've gone to some of the other System Center sessions that this looks very much like the installation for the other System Center products. Fact is, I can give you a story. This looks so much like the other installations for the System Center products. I was on my second dry run through of this before I realized I was actually installing Ops Manager code and had to go and swap out the source code. So here we are installing Orchestrator, and it's going to bring up that same sort of component of, hey, I've read this and got my product key, and probably not going to wait for everyone to read it in the room, but we'll rush ahead. It says, hey, I'm going to install your management server. You can deselect all of these other components because it's, oh, I've selected to do a full install. The management server is compulsory, but it's going to install my other optional bits and pieces. It's going to go and do my prereq check, and it will ask for some things. It's not going to ask for some obscure things for Operations Manager, but because I fixed all of those, it won't ask for those either. Finally, wants a service account. And I'll have to remember what the service account was. I'll cheat. Please don't do this at home. So that service account is fairly important because the action server will execute underneath that. So you need to give it appropriate privileges and do not use the administrator. Choose my SQL server. Choose to create a new database. Type the SQL server incorrectly. Sorry, guys, it's late in the day. Anna was telling me she knows good salsa dancing too. Yeah, it'd be a good time.
Let's start with the salsa.
While we wait for that to time out, we might go back to Anna and go on to the slides.
Okay, let's take a look then. Talking about the runbook designer, we saw about it before in part of the demo that Phil showed us. Remember that this is an experience that is really easy to use. For those who never played with Opalis before, this is something that is very visual-like. It's just about drag and drop, put some information on the activities, maybe put some information in every link, and that's it. It's really easy to use. Then we have the orchestrator console that we discussed before. This is about the Silverlight console. We can get access to it, and we can do anything. We can start a runbook. We can monitor where the runbook is. We will see some little check marks in every specific part of the runbook that's been accomplished before. We also have the ability to monitor what's happening in every specific moment. And also, if we have to do some troubleshooting, we have the ability to do that. We will take a look to the web console now.
Cool. Now, get the name of the SQL server right this time. Choose a management group, so we'll have our System Center admins group in here. Part of the beta, it does actually pick the local server rather than going picking the domain. Now, it's going to install two services here for us. The first service is our self-service portal, which we're going to look at in a moment. The second service is the web service, which Anna's going to talk about, and it's defined those ports for us already. Bang, and it's off and running, and when that finishes, we'll have an operating orchestrator environment, which is so much better than the previous experience with Opalis. So here I am in the new self-service console. One of the key components about this is you can have your level 3 support guys building complex workflows. You can have the security division building workflows. They can then pass the ability to actually go and execute these runbooks workflows directly from anyone's PC, anyone who's got authorization. There's full Active Directory integration into all of the folders and then directly onto the runbooks themselves. So you can choose who can see what in them and who can actually execute those components. I can see a list of my runbooks because I've selected at the top level, or I can narrow that down by going into any of my folders. I can see any of the definition of those by clicking on them. And this is a very different experience if you think about someone that comes to execute a script today. If you said to someone, no worries, that problem's fixed, just go and run that script, the first thing they do is open up this giant script and have to spend 10 minutes looking at it before they execute it. Here we can quite quickly see what information's actually there and choose whether it's the right thing that we want to do. We can see a summary of all of the things that are happening in that folder. We can see any jobs that are executing. This is a failing in the current environment. It's very hard to see in Opalis what's actually executing at any one time. We make that a lot easier to get to. We can see any instances that are continuing to run as we go. So from there, I can select one of my runbooks, and I'll choose my temp file folders, which won't execute anything, and start running that. And it tells me the job's been submitted and would then go off and execute quite quickly in the background. If I choose something that had a parameter, which wasn't that, excuse me while I remember, my initialized data component, which we knew we had a parameter before, it's going to come up and prompt me, and I can enter in those parameters to then be executed with that runbook. So I can actually take a bit of user interaction there.
Okay. Some of the new features too. This is about a new web service. This web service is going to enable us to consume the information because it will expose the information that Orchestrator is actually delivering. So this is a way to interact not just with Orchestrator, but also with System Center. This web service uses Open Data Protocol, so that's why this is amazing. This is really huge. We also have the Quick Integration Kit. We've been talking about this in the previous slides. This is a way where we can go and maybe compile, let's think about a PowerShell script. We can go and put it in this amazing tool. We can start a wizard, and the wizard is going to deliver us at the end something in the way of a published data. This means that we are starting the creation of some activities or maybe some integration packs. We have a lot of these in the CodePlex site that you can go and check. Most of that information is ready to use. So this is just an example of what the community has been doing with the Quick Integration Kit and some imagination. What you are seeing here, because I think it's a little bit confusing, what you are seeing here is System Center Configuration Manager extension. So this is an extension of the actual integration pack of System Center.
And this wasn't built by Microsoft. This is just part of the community that's building these things out. And if you think back on Apollos is a great runbook, didn't have a lot of customers, had some very big customers, but what we've done by making Orchestrator available to a lot more people, the community is a lot more interested in developing these integration packs, and we're seeing a lot of these come out, not only of the community, but also from vendors. NetApp recently released two of theirs integration packs, and they're great components in themselves.
Okay. Looking ahead to the release candidate, what we are going to see, we are going to see some improvements for the console. We are going to see also some improvements for the Quick Integration Kit. We will see the support for IPv6. We also are going to globalize the solution or the product. What this means is that this solution is going to run not just in English versions, it's going to run in also another operative systems, I mean another language versions. And we also will have an updated of the existing System Center integration packs. Okay, let's summarize this, guys. What we saw in this presentation, remember, Orchestrator is about integration, orchestration, and automation. Orchestrator is part of the System Center suite, and we have to think about, in every single IT environment that we have, we can see a specific part and a specific piece that Orchestrator is actually going to solve. So this is the presentation, guys. Let's move now. Remember, please, to respond your evaluations so you can win this amazing mouse. Also, remember to scan your tags. And let's start with the Q&A.
So we've got a couple of prizes for good questions. Yes, sir.
How does it handle authentication on the
remote? Great question. So the question was, how does it handle authentication on remote systems? In fact, as I'll extend upon that, how does it work in diverse environments? You might have four or five different Active Directories, six or seven, you know, operations manager servers or anything like that. So there's a couple of things that it does for that. Many of the integration components themselves have the security built into it, so you can edit that either at runtime or on each individual ones. For example, here on the, I can supply individual credentials to get to that file share if I needed to, if it was a remote system, if it was a Unix or Linux system. Again, we'd provide credentials to get on there. Or if we're using SSH. If we're using SSH, then we can put in the SSH fingerprints and all that sort of stuff in there. Separately, on top of that, a lot of the integration components, and I'll show you the example of, integration component from Operations Manager. Now, when I go into the Operations Manager integration component, when I want to choose a connection, it'll give me a list of different connections that I can choose from. So I might have three or four different Operations Manager servers, and each one of those connections can have some of the security built into that, and I can go and add it. I can go and edit the security credentials there, or I could possibly even edit them at runtime as well in many of those components. Good question.
Thank you.
Another question. Good question. So the question was, what are the hardware requirements and can it coexist? The hardware requirements for it are really light, but they are also, you know, your mileage may vary. If you're going to run hundreds and hundreds of workbooks, you're going to need bigger and beefier hardware. Originally, when Orchestrator shipped on a single x86 virtualized instance, you'd probably look at about run 50 concurrent runbooks at a time. So that means that are executing, not that are monitoring process, that are actually executing. We bumped that up under the X64 edition, well up into the 200 plus sort of range. The infrastructure for it is mainly an SQL database, and from there you have action servers that all read out of that of the SQL database. Those action servers can be in diverse locations if you need them to be, and they can actually sit in different domains as well on top of that. From that point of view, you can scale out horizontally fairly easily. But the overall, the hardware requirements are pretty light, but it depends on what you're doing. If you start putting in some heavy things like Service Manager is a good example. Service Manager uses the interface for Service Manager, which can be a bit heavy and a bit laborsome. So if you're doing a lot of work on that, it'd take a while. However, if you were just doing some file moving and stuff like that, yes, you can have hundreds. And it happily coexists with most systems. But we'll find a lot more about that as we get closer to the release.
So what action is taken if a change that Orchestrator has raised fails? So say, for example, if it has a change, tries to remediate or fix something and it fails.
Good question. So the question was, what happens if one of our runbooks fail or something actually goes wrong in our environment? Now, we've got quite a few options, actually, in this. First of all, we're going to release a management pack with Orchestrator 2012, so you can monitor Orchestrator with Operations Manager. On top of that, we're actually writing things out of all the steps that occurred. So if I went back to the runbook and I'll show you the more complex one that I was running under Apalis, which did eventually kick off. Here I can actually see the previous run history, and that's all recorded in the database, and we've got access to that. And you can see what went on and the bits that failed. For example, this component here failed. Now, I might have been happy with that failure, but actually the way I've designed my runbook is in these flows here. The default for a flow is to continue going on if it actually succeeded. However, you can update that, and in this case we've said, hey, if you fail in this, then take this action down here, which for us was to raise a service desk ticket, and because this one did fail, I can go find a service desk incident ticket in that environment. But you could write that out to a log, you write that out to a database, you can do whatever you need to. So the question was, does it detect who you should then pass on that ticket to if you're creating to it? That's up to you. That's your process. You can put anything you want in there. In this instance, you know, we did some actions here based on some information to find who owned an application and then went and found that person and assigned the ticket to that. You can enter all that sort of information into here, as I've got just emergency and some details in that incident, but I could quite easily go and pick a person to assign that ticket to, or I might have that intelligence inside Service Manager, which is actually an important point. I've talked a lot about the integration between Orchestrator and Service Manager. With the Service Manager beta that we're going to see shortly, we're going to see a lot tighter integration. Those activities that I was looking at inside Service Manager, they can now be Orchestrator actions. So in this example, when we were actually monitoring Service Manager to wait for something to happen and then going off and doing something, with Service Manager 2012, you connect Service Manager directly to Orchestrator, and then you have actions to say, right, in my process, now go and do this with Orchestrator. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
Is there an import facility that imports whatever current processes that you have to Orchestrator to facilitate the setup and all the groups and users and
yep. So the question was, is there a facility to import all of your existing process and get all of that sort of stuff happening? We have a very special one. It's this lovely GUI. So basically, it's you. you can draw these up. You'll be surprised at how quickly you draw them up. The biggest problem I have in demoing this product is getting a process from people. If I sit down with people, and I've done this with a couple of people recently, I said, what is it you need to do? Oh, it's, you know, I need to do X, Y, and Z to a server on a daily basis. Right, let's sit down and work that out and draw them out, and pulling out the action items quite quickly and have the workflow together in minutes. If you've got that process, and the process is the hardest thing to do, then you'll be able to draw these together quite quickly. You'll be able to export and import them from different Apalis and Orchestrator systems. They do have a native component to move in between. But also, a lot of the work that you have in there in those other systems can also be reused. If you have a huge library of PowerShell scripts or batch files, which many of us do, you can then take those and embed them directly into here. For example, if I go and get the .NET script component, which is an extremely powerful component, we can just open that up. We can choose what language .NET we're using, C#, PowerShell, whatever it is. We can paste that script into here. We can even use components and parameters from other pieces of published data in there. But we can also choose to publish the variables from the .NET script back onto the data bus. Now, if you took your biggest PowerShell script and chunked it up into what all the components are and made them all little activities and passed all the parameters around on the data bus, you'd suddenly find it was a lot more reusable. And in fact, that's when you can take the quick and actually make them bigger actions if you want to, which a lot of people do. Good question. Yes, sir. Sorry. Big bright lights.
Okay. With existing policies in 2007, will they be something we can export or reuse in 2012?
So the question was, can existing policies inside Orchestrator 6.3, which is the current version?
Apalis.
Apalis 6.3. I'd give a book to everyone that said that, but I haven't got any left, sorry. Apalis 6.3 into Orchestrator 2012, yes, the definite vision is that it will be an in-place upgrade process and that those policies will continue to run. That's a design goal. Sir?
Documentation of that process, where do you put that?
What a great question. If you're not happy with the fact that it's lovely, pretty interface isn't self-documenting enough and you want to take this to the next level, I didn't repeat the question, did I? The question was, what about documentation to that environment? If the interface isn't enough for you, because you can be pretty, you can rename all of these bits and pieces, you know, to, you know, what this really is sort of thing. And you can actually add names to all of the lines. You can change the colour to all of the lines. You can be quite graphical with it to make sense. There's some best practices about how to lay these out, which are published up on the web. If that's not enough for you, the community's actually built two add-ins for this. One of them exports it to Visio, so you can do even more stuff with it for documentation, and the other one exports it to Word. But they're community add-ins. Do you have a question? So the question was, is there any integration with InfoPath workflow?
So you capture...
Yep. Look, it's done because I really know nothing about InfoPath. come and find me later and we'll find an InfoPath person. And question. It is a web service. We can call that web service basically from everything else. And gentlemen asked a question about working with other systems as well. It's a good point. This is quite happily worked together with other orchestration engines. Because it's a web service, they can consume it. It can consume their web services. Anything else that can consume a web service, it's quite happy. It's got a web service built-in function as well. Do you know if InfoPath can do web services? Can? There you go. It's got native integration with InfoPath. Yes, sir.
So another quick one. Can it listen for events?
Yes, it can.
No.
The question was, you know, can we listen and watch for events? In fact, that's how you would do, and I meant to do a demo of this, sorry, how you would initiate a lot of your responses. And in this example, I'm going to listen and watch operations manager. However, I could be listening and watching service desk, service manager. I can be watching file systems. I can watch, there's a whole heap of monitors in here, which are the native monitors. Anything that says monitor is checking for something. So monitor IP, I can be seeing if a computer's gone down. Monitor a web service or website, I can actually look to see if I've got access to a website, and that's not available. Any of those monitors can start and initiate the workflow. So what happens there is we start it with the monitor, we press go on it, it'll sit there waiting for the monitor to trigger something, and then it'll initiate the runbook every time that monitor triggers. The runbook will continue to run, but instantiate instances of itself to manage that. And this is a big thing around incident response. So here's a good example. I'm monitoring for an alert. I might want to monitor out of Operations Manager anything that has matches the name, computer unreachable. And then I want to go and do something about that. So from there, if I've determined that the computer's unreachable, I've got an alert inside Operations Manager, I might want to go and do some remediation of that. So to do that, I will go and see if the computer's up. I'll go and see how much disk space it's got on it. I'll go and see what certain processes are running on it. I might go and see the services on that. Now I can link all of those together. If I can grab the tiny little handles. I can link all of those together in a branch without having to worry about what the process would look like. And then I can write all of that to a text file that says, here is the immediate remediation. Or if I was linking this back to a service desk system, I can say, level one support desk guy opens up service manager. It says computer was unreachable. And all of a sudden, there's a whole heap of information in here and diagnostic stuff that's been written by Orchestrator or Parlus to actually do some of that semi-remediation stuff just to collect information. Or it might have actually tried to correct some of the issues as well. We can start to take that process. And again, process is the hardest thing to get in this. We can start to take any of that process that the level one support desk guys do and start to embed it in here. And we can go as far as we can until we come to a point that, hey, we know hand off to human interaction. And process is an important point. You can get some processes from the community website. There's things like patching clusters, virtual machine provisioning, and those components. But we've definitely got the vision of this is the place that Microsoft will then continue to embed our best practice processes into this type of environment. Sorry, is that you can schedule the runbooks?
Yeah.
So there's definitely scheduling tasks in here. I'm not going to suggest that you would replace your enterprise class scheduling tool with this, but it definitely has the ability on the smaller end to just tick off runbooks at certain times to check for certain things if you need to. One last question and then we'll wrap up. Yep, so the question was, how do we make Orchestrator, which becomes this integral part of our private cloud, how do we make that highly available? Well, as I said, there are two core components to Orchestrator. There is the database. To make that highly available, we cluster it. And then there is the action servers which read that database. Now, those scale out happily across horizontally, so you can start to have four or five action servers, and if they fail, they'll actually take over from each other and pick up the runbooks as they were running. Cool. Thank you so much for your attendance, guys. I know it's late in the day. Hope you have a great time.
Thank you.